All right, good afternoon. Thanks for attending today's presentation. My name is Will Brandt. I am a senior technical lead on the Outlook support team within Microsoft. What that means is that I work with our support team that's taking inbound calls from all of you folks. And when they need help on a case, they get stuck, they typically come to me first. I've been at Microsoft for about 6 years, currently on the Outlook team, as I mentioned. I've also been on the Word, PowerPoint teams, and several other support teams. So what we're going to be talking about today is supporting Office in an enterprise environment and some different troubleshooting techniques that you can use, some of the ones that we use internally when we run into problems with customers. The session's targeted at mostly IT pros and help desk folks. Doesn't mean that other folks won't get benefit out of it, but that's really who this is designed for. Let's take a look at the agenda. We're going to spend most of our time today on Outlook. We'll take a look at several different areas, general troubleshooting, calendar, connectivity, and we'll also take a look at a tool called OCAT, or the Outlook Configuration Analyzer tool. We'll look at some general troubleshooting for each of the other products listed up there, Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, and we'll have Q&A at the end. I do have a lot of content, so I'd ask that you please hold your questions until the end. If we do run out of time, I'm more than happy to stick around and talk with anyone for however long. I want to make sure that we get everybody out of here on time for lunch, right? So without further ado, let's take a look at some general troubleshooting for Outlook. So with Outlook, we can bucket the types of issues that can occur into four different large areas. So crashes, application stops responding, you get the Windows crash error message. Hangs mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So Outlook is unresponsive, or Outlook shows not responding in the toolbar, you get a white screen, a number of different things that can fall into that hangs bucket. Few different things that can be happening in the client. Error messages, fairly straightforward, and an unexpected behavior. I click this button, I expect something to happen, and that's not what happens. So what are some good things that you can do for any of these issues? The first is profiles. So as part of isolation troubleshooting, most of you are probably doing isolation with machine and Windows user profiles. So if that user logs onto a different machine, do they have the same issue? That'll help you identify that problem. With Outlook, it's also important to do testing with the Outlook profile because we store a lot of settings in there. The most important thing, or the first thing, create a new Outlook profile. So if I create a new Outlook profile to the same mailbox, do I have the same problem? What that'll tell you is, is the problem following the mailbox or is the problem following the user? Also, along with that, it's a good idea to create a new profile in both cached and online mode. We do a number of different things differently in Outlook based on what mode you're running it in. So if, for example, message delivery. If you're having message delivery problems in cached mode, the message submit is significantly different than what we do in online mode. Online mode, we hand it off to the server and say, hey, server, send this. In cached mode, the client is responsible for sending it. So doing a cache versus online mode test can help you identify if you have a client, if you should be looking at the client or the server. Typically, and this isn't always the case, but typically if you have a problem in online mode, you want to be looking at the server because we offload a lot onto Exchange in online mode. In cache mode, more often than not, you're looking at something that's going on the client. And we'll take a quick look at a demo. One other thing I want to point out here, don't convert profiles. So if you want to test cached in online mode, let's say that we have a cache mode profile and I say I want to test an online mode. I'm going to go clear that checkbox for cache mode and test an online mode. That won't always get you the true online mode experience. Sometimes artifacts of that cache mode profile hang around like the OST and we still act as a cache mode client in some capacity. So always better to create new profiles than to reuse existing ones for troubleshooting purposes. Next is add-in troubleshooting. Add-ins by nature alter Outlook's behavior. So not to say that that's a bad thing, that's just their nature. But when troubleshooting Outlook, it's useful to get rid of those. The easiest way to do that is with safe mode. So Outlook/safe. That'll start Outlook without most add-ins. We'll also take a look at, when we do the demo, at a tool called Process Explorer, which is a sysinternals tool that can help you identify if any third-party DLLs are loading against Outlook. Even it is possible to write an add-in that will load in safe mode. It's possible to write an add-in that will load even if you disable it from COM add-ins. Antivirus are notorious for that. And you know, again, by nature, those things are supposed to be difficult to kill. So, but as a troubleshooting person, it's something that you want to be conscious of. Did I really get rid of everything? Switches. Outlook has a number of command line switches. We talked about the safe switch just a moment ago. In addition to getting rid of add-ins, safe mode also does a few other things, like disabling toolbar customizations and testing or turning the reading pane off. If you have an issue, one of those intermittent things, it's useful to have the user run in safe mode for a little while to see if they can continue to reproduce the issue. That can be painful for users, but it's definitely a worthwhile sort of thing. A couple others that I have called out here are clean views and clean reminders. Clean views is useful for issues where you switch between folders and things don't render properly, any problem with the view, essentially. The view is something that is stored on the Exchange mailbox. So if you see a problem, follow the user from profile to profile, machine to machine, you could potentially have a view problem. One caveat that you always want to give users before you run clean views is that it will set them back to the default view, and they'll have to redo their customizations. It's a worthwhile test, but setting expectations up front is always a good thing. Clean reminders, you got a reminder you can't get to go away. That's a good one to try rather than having to go to MFC mapping and clear it out. There's in the references section, there's a link to all of the switches. If you just go out and do a Bing search for Outlook insert version command line switches, you'll get the whole list. They are different across versions. Most of them, these up here are pretty universal, but there are some that are available in 2010 that are not in 2007 and vice versa, so be conscious of that. So let's flip over and take a look at some profile and add-in troubleshooting in Outlook. All right, so here we have our Outlook client. We can tell that this particular user is in online mode because in the bottom right corner here, it says online with Microsoft Exchange. If we were using a cache mode profile, we would see connected to Microsoft Exchange right there. So that is fairly version independent. If you see that, that's a dead giveaway right away. So to test with a different profile, we'll go into mail. Show profiles, add ourselves a new one, and we can run through auto discover all the way to the end. If I click next here, I'm going to get cache mode profile. If you check this box to manually configure server settings, from here you have the option to clear or check cached exchange mode. So, again, just want to reiterate, always test with new profiles. If you have an existing cache mode profile, don't go in and clear this out. I talked to a customer a couple weeks ago, said that we switched a user to online mode, but they were still having messages sit in the local outbox. And that's a cache mode thing. So what had ended up happening was that they had that artifact of cache mode, and they were still getting some cache mode behavior. Not typical, but can happen. So I'm just going to cancel out of that. I'm not going to create the profile right now. And after that, start up Outlook with that new profile, see if the problem follows. So add-in troubleshooting. Disabling add-ins, a lot of this can be done from add-ins. Here we have in the options menu, here we have a list of all of the active application add-ins. If we go into COM add-ins, we can clear out checkboxes for these add-ins and get rid of most of them. In conjunction with that, we can also launch Outlook in safe mode and get rid of most of them. But if you really want to confirm, and this is something that we do with most customers when they call us for support, this tool is called Process Explorer. It's a SysInternals tool. It's freely available. Again, Bing search, Process Explorer, or check the references. What we'll do in Process Explorer, launch it, go to View, Lower Pane View, and you want to have DLLs checked. From here, we need to find Outlook in our process list, so you can just type Outlook and it will select it for you. And down at the bottom, it shows everything that Outlook is attached to. So you have a number of DLLs that we're attached to for normal operation. If this were a cache mode profile that we were using, you would also see the OST attached here. The typical strategy that I take for this is to sort by company name and just look through and identify anything that's not Microsoft. Once you notice that, and why not Microsoft? Because we would never do anything to cause you problems. So once you identify those, then it's a matter of how do I get rid of that. Sometimes it's renaming DLLs. Sometimes it's uninstalling that application. Running without add-ins can be painful for users, again, much like some of those switches we talked about. But it's a necessary test. It'll get you back to bare bones Outlook, and it'll help you identify if your problem is being caused by an add-in. So with that, let's move on to calendar. Calendar is our most common type of issue that we deal with in support. What do I say when I'm talking about calendar? Missing calendar items, duplicate calendar items, time changes, organizer changes. Anybody had an issue like that in their environment? Yeah. It's very common. Calendar is a very complex sort of operation. Used to be this thing that just the Outlook client touched, and now you have all this stuff interacting with the calendar. So it's a very complex sort of thing. So what are some things that you can do to help mitigate problems with calendar? Mobile devices. So it's more and more common, especially with consumerization of IT, that you have users bringing their own devices, or they want to connect their devices to their Exchange calendar. So iPads, iPhones, Windows phones, Android devices, good mobile, number of other things. So those things empower users to use their calendar in different ways. Best things that you can do, keep Exchange updated. We're constantly working to improve Exchange Active Sync and address problems that that are brought to our attention by vendors, by customers. So almost every roll-up, stuff for Active Sync. So stay on top of Exchange updates. Keep your devices updated. Like we're trying to stay on top of Exchange updates, vendors are trying to stay on top of their devices and issues that they know about. So if you're on iPhone, iPad, make sure you're on the most recent version of iOS that you can be on for that device. If you're on Windows Phone, make sure you have your devices updated, et cetera. We do maintain a knowledge base article that's up here. It's also in the references section that talks about the current issues that we're aware of with ActiveSync and third-party devices. This is a kind of a living KB article. We update this frequently, so it's a good thing to reference if you have somebody that reports a problem to you. There's several different issues documented out here. Talks about what is the cause of that issue and if there's anything you can do to fix it. Next thing that you can do to avoid problems with calendar is encourage your users to set end dates for recurring meetings. Can't emphasize this one enough. So the architecture of a recurring calendar item in Outlook is essentially it's one object on the calendar, and it has a recurrence pattern. When Outlook or your device or OA looks at that, it looks at the recurrence pattern and says, okay, I need to put this item on such and such day ending here. Every time you create an exception to that item, so you change the date or time, you add some notes to the field and send that out, you create an attachment. So what happens then when Outlook is processing it, it looks at, says I need to put this on the calendar, and then I need to make all of these changes. Same thing with mobile devices. So all those devices, clients are processing that. Every time you add an exception to an item, you introduce the possibility of corruption. End dates are a way to mitigate that. So how to choose the right end date? That kind of is an art in and of itself. If you have somebody's birthday, you probably don't need to choose an end date to that. That's kind of rude. And you know, it's not going to change. There's not going to be any exceptions to it. So it's fine. If you have a weekly meeting that somebody sends out notes for after the meeting or that frequently changes, maybe you want to look at something like 6 months because you're going to have the possibility for several exceptions in there. If you have a daily meeting, maybe something like a month or 3 months at most. So take a look at the type of meeting that you have and the amount of possible exceptions and use that to determine what the appropriate end date is. Delegates. So delegates are another common cause of calendar issues, or common contributor, I shouldn't say cause, of calendar issues in Outlook/Exchange. There's an inherent logic problem there, and a lot of delegate things are dependent upon communication between the delegates. It's not so much a software problem, it's who's processing the items. So if you have 15 delegates, manager's processing the item, he accepts it, delegate declines it, last one wins. So whoever is acting last is controlling what's on the calendar. Similarly, if you have an item that's tentative on the calendar that's been processed by Exchange, and one of the delegates deletes the meeting request without responding to it, it will disappear from the calendar. That's in by design behavior. So what can you do? Well, think about who needs to act on an item, and as a group between those delegates and the manager user, come up with a strategy. Who's going to process these items? What are you going to do with the items that you're not going to process? A general rule of thumb is never delete. If you need to get rid of meeting requests from your inbox, create a folder, move them to there. Also, limit the total number of delegates. So I mentioned 15 delegates just a moment ago. Really bad idea. We actually recommend 4 delegates at most. That's what we test with, 4 delegates. If you have more than that, there's certainly other ways that you can provide similar functionality to them. So what do they really need? Do they need to respond to all the meeting requests, or do they just need to have access to that manager user's calendar? Maybe sharing permissions are a better option. One is always best, certainly not possible in all scenarios, but 4 is our recommended maximum. Last thing I have up here is versions of the Outlook client. It is always best practice to have manager users and delegate users on the same version. So same version, same service pack. That's especially true with earlier versions of Outlook, but at least Outlook 2007 SP2 or higher. We made a number of calendar improvements in 2007 SP2, but we'd really like to see them on the same. So if your manager user is using 2010 SP1, we want to see delegates on 2010 SP1 as well. So moving on, let's talk about a tool that you can use to identify calendar problems proactively. This tool is called CalCheck. It was written by one of our engineers within the Outlook support team. It's available out at calcheck.codeplex.com. Also, Bing search will find this for you. What it does is it opens the default calendar for a given profile that is controllable via switch. So if you want to open different profiles or run this per server, you can certainly do that. We open the profile and we check for known problems, the stuff that we know about in support that can cause calendar items not to render, that sort of thing. We check for permission problems. We check for no organizer email address, missing DISPID recurring property. That property is missing from the item. It will cause it to not show in day, week, month view. A number of other things. Those are just a couple of examples. Kelcheck has a number of switches available. The dash A switch will output all items to a CSV file. That's really useful for finding meetings that don't have end dates. If you want to audit calendars for that, we'll look at how to do that in just a few moments. The S switch will allow you to process an entire server unless you specify a mailbox. So if you want to run CalCheck against a certain mailbox, you can certainly do that. Probably want to do that after hours, but possible. That dash R switch will drop a report message in the user's inbox with a log file that will tell them what sort of problems CalCheck detected. So it'll show them some meetings that they may want to take a look at. There's a few other switches. You can use the help switch to show all of those items. So with that, let's switch over and take a look. All right, so I have CalCheck downloaded. It's in this folder right here. I'm going to run it from a command line. And I'm just going to run it without any switches to start with. So when I run it, initially, the first thing I get a prompt for is which profile do I want to use. And this is profiles that are available on the machine. I'm going to click OK, and it's going to run. This runs very, very quickly. I don't have very many calendar items on this test calendar for the purposes of this demo. It may take a little bit longer if you have larger calendars. And what it'll do is it will drop this calcheck.log file into the same directory as where CalCheck exists. So let's open that up. And the tool outputs a number of different things. We can see which mailbox was opened, if we had a problem with proxy addresses, not necessarily something I'm concerned about. We check local FreeBSY information, so if you're not able to see FreeBSY in Outlook, this may detect a problem for you. Lists out delegates, lists out permissions on the calendar, then goes through and processes each item. So I had four items on the calendar, did not detect any problems with the ones that I had. If it did, it would give you an output that said, these are the problems that were detected, and this is what that problem means, essentially. So let's run with the dash A switch. Again, prompted for the profile. And it drops the CSV file into the folder for us. What this does, it'll list out what mailbox was processed. You see the subject for each of the meetings that are on the calendar. So these are my four meetings right here. Location, and I have a bunch of data about the meeting as far as where it starts, message class, how many recipients that meeting has. Now, I mentioned the recurrence. It's a good way to audit for recurring meetings with no end dates. So right here we have recurrence start. We know this is a recurring meeting. There's also a property in here that will tell you it's true. And you can see here that under recurrence end, I have no end date. So that's a really good way to quickly identify those things. There are a number of other things that you can use this type of report for, any type of calendar auditing, but it's a quick way to get data out of Exchange. All right. It's connectivity. Second to last thing we'll talk about for Outlook. First is auto-discover. Auto-discover is something that you need to be really aware of because it's a whole lot more than just configuring the mailbox. So that's one great thing about auto-discover is it'll help you configure a mailbox without a lot of administrative effort. It also tells Outlook how to use a bunch of features. So if auto-discover isn't working properly, you can have problems with things like the availability service. And I'm speaking directly about Exchange 2007, 2010, or Office 365 here. You can have problems with the availability service, not being able to see FreeBSY information correctly. So if I can't pull anybody's FreeBSY, it could be linked to auto-discover. Out of office, driven by auto-discover. Offline address book, driven by auto-discover. Exchange 2010, Outlook 2010 have a feature called auto-mapped mailbox. That's also driven by auto-discover. Auto-mapped mailbox, what that is if you have full permissions to a mailbox on Exchange, or you have an archive mailbox on Exchange 2010, we will set that up automatically for you in your profile. If auto-discover isn't working, that process will not happen. We'll look at a tool that you can use to troubleshoot it in just a moment to get some information about it. Next tool is connection status. Connection status will show you your active Exchange connections, your active GC connections, and public folder connections. You can get some metrics about those connections. We'll look at that in the demo as well. Last connectivity tool that we have up here is the Remote Connectivity Analyzer. Let's just pull that up here. What the Remote Connectivity Analyzer does is allows you to test Exchange from a remote location. This simulates Outlook connecting to Exchange and can help identify some problems with things like the DNS, firewall, certificates, if you have an ISA proxy. It's useful for a number of things other than just Outlook. You can test ActiveSync, you can test EWS, Exchange Web Services. Exchange Web Services is kind of the premier development protocol for Exchange right now. More recent versions of BlackBerry use EWS, Mac Outlook uses EWS, so this is a tool that you can use to test those protocols. Outlook Anywhere and then auto-discover, there's also a test here for that. So like OCAT, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, this will identify any known problems and will try to point you in a direction of how do I resolve this problem instead of just, you know, here's a problem. If we have KBs for that, if we have TechNet content for that, we'll try to point you to that. TestExchangeConnectivity.com. Or Bing search, right? All right, so let's take a look at some different troubleshooting techniques as far as connectivity. So down on the system tray, and we have a Windows 7 machine here, depending on how you have it configured, you might have to click that little button. We have the Outlook icon. If you right-click on this, we have some options here. But if you hold down Control and right-click, you get a couple different options. Just hold Control, right-click on that icon. The two things that we're going to talk about are the two that popped up, connection status and test email auto-configuration. So we're going to start with test email auto-configuration. In support, we typically clear these two guest smart boxes because we want to use SCP and we're not particularly interested in the guest smart process. We really just want the auto-discover data. We have our email address listed for the logged on user, and then we'll just hit test, and it will run through and test and give us information back. If you have a failure here, it'll give you information about that failure. But we can also look at this and identify some of that information that's important that we were talking about a few minutes ago. So availability service dependent on auto-discover. Here's the URL that's being used for this client to access the availability service. So if you can't get FreeBSY information and you run this test and the availability service is giving you an invalid URL, you have an Exchange auto-discover problem that you need to take a look at rather than looking at the client. We also have our out-of-office URL, our OAB download URL. OABs, it's useful to compare if you have working machines and not working machines. It's useful to run this on both. Compare that URL. Are you hitting the same OAB service? Sometimes can point you to a problem with a specific CAS that's hosting that OAB file. And there's a number of other pieces of information here, but that's the high-level overview. There's a log. It will tell you exactly where it's auto-discovering from. This was found through SCP because I have a logged-on domain user. And we can see the raw XML of the auto-discover output as well. So if you want to dig through the raw XML, I know that I personally prefer that. But you can look at the results or you can look at XML. So connection status, let's flip over there. Same thing, control, right-click on Outlook connection status, and here you'll see all of the active connections that Outlook has open. So in this test environment, I have a single multi-role server, so all of my connections are going to the same server. But in your environment, you'll see various different things. A few things to call out. I have two Active Directory connections. I have one active mail connection. If you are opening shared mailboxes, you may see different mail connections to different places. It tells me what type of connection I have. You'll see two different things here. We have TCP/IP right now. It means I have an RPC over TCP connection to my Exchange server. If you see HTTPS here, that means that you're doing Outlook Anywhere or RPC over HTTP. That's important to be aware of. If you have a specific problem in Outlook Anywhere, it's good to test and see if you can reproduce it with a TCP connection as well. It'll give you some direction as far as where you should be looking. We have some metrics over further to the right as far as how many requests have been made, what our average response time is, what type of RPC connection we have. This is asynchronous. Last thing that's noted here is version. This can sometimes be useful if you're not, especially if you're in a transition environment, you're not sure where that mailbox lives. Is it on 2007? Is it on 2010? This will tell you. 14 dot whatever is Exchange 2010 service pack, second number. So for example, 14.1 is Exchange 2010 Service Pack 1. 14.0, this is RTM. 14.2 would be Service Pack 2. Exchange 2007 is 8. Dot, same convention, so 8.1 Service Pack 1, 8.2 Service Pack 2, and so on. I'm sure nobody's running Exchange 2003, but if you were, it would be 6. Dot something. So this is a quick way to look. You can also kick off a reconnect from here if you want to do a manual reconnect without relaunching the client. All right, so last tool for Outlook that we're going to talk about is OCAT. This is the Microsoft Outlook Configuration Analyzer tool. Version 2 of the tool released just a few days ago, so it's out there now. Link to download there or Bing search. provides a detailed report of the current Outlook profile. We'll run it and highlight any known problems that we're aware of. So with V2, we did something pretty cool. We have the ability to push updates to this, essentially. So as we update the tool with more known issues that we're aware of, those configuration files are able to be downloaded by OCAT. So you don't have to re-download the tool to get new updates. V2 also runs CalCheck, that tool that we talked about earlier. And it's really useful. We'll look at it as a data collection tool by help desk personnel. So if you're on a call with somebody, they've got to run. You can have them run OCAT, save out the XML file, and send it to you. Now you have all the information you need about their system without having to keep them on the phone. It's very quick data collection. We use a form of this within. We use this as a subset of our data collection tool within Microsoft support. So this is very similar to the tool that we have available. Updates to OCAT. There's a Twitter feed out there, MS_OCAT. So if you want the most up-to-date information on that, follow us on Twitter. So let's take a look at it. So OCAT gets installed. There it is, right up at the top. I'm not going to check for updates, but the first thing that we're going to try each time you launch the tool is check for updates. We'll just go to the welcome screen. If you've ever run like Exchange Extra, Exchange Troubleshooting Assistant, or Exchange BPA, they have a similar sort of look and feel. So we're going to run a new scan, but you'll see I have a couple other options here. I'm able to view a configuration scan that was done earlier on a different machine, and there's also a link to the remote connectivity analyzer. We'll call this and we have the options between a full scan and an offline scan. Full scan scans the mailbox and all of the Exchange fun stuff. If you need to specify credentials, you're able to do that. And then let's start the scan. Depending on the machine, this can take a few moments here. Right now, you can see as it runs what sort of things we're doing. It won't actually take, oh, there we go. Won't actually take us 10 minutes here. But you can see we're gathering information about the profile, gathering information about the machine, and there, we're done already. Again, this is a really small profile, really small mailbox, so in a production environment, you're likely to see this take a little bit longer, but it's still very, very efficient as far as a method of data collection. So we have a few different report options here. We have our list report that will display all of the things that were found. You can drill through this. If you have any warnings that pop up, any critical items, those will be highlighted here. We can look at all items, highlights a couple problems that may occur or you may want to be aware of. So mail merge. If you had a mail merge issue, ran OCAT, you'd be pointed out here that wwlib is out of date. Why do we care about wwlib? That's the Word editor. That's our email editor in Outlook 2007 and 2010. So Outlook 2007 and 2010, as far as editing capabilities, creating new mail, reading mail, very dependent on Word, the Word version that's on the system. Even if you don't have Word, the corresponding Word version installed, we put some stub code on the machine, so you'll still have, we're still dependent on Word. Don't have the latest updates for Outlook, Word, or MSO, so probably a little bit of patching I need to do on this machine, but nothing major. I can also drill through this if I want to. I mentioned that it's a good way to do data collection. I can drill through this. I have the Windows or the Office architecture, the Windows architecture, where it's installed, profile, security settings. So number of different pieces of data that you can get from this and very quickly collect data. To export this off, just click Export Report. You'll be able to save it out as an XML file. So that's all for Outlook. We'll take a look at the other Office products here, Word, Excel, PowerPoint. We'll start off with Word. So like Outlook, we'll try to attempt to bucket issues in Word into a few different areas. Print issues, layout on screen, styles not applying correctly or not the way that you expect them to. That kind of ties into formatting issues. And then last, unable to open a document, disaster recovery scenario. So a few things with Word. Templates. Word is really dependent on templates. There is a template attached to every document. Most often, it's normal.dotm in Word 2007 or 2010. But depending on the document, how it's created, you might have a template that is attached elsewhere. Why is that important to be aware of? Well, let's say that we have a document that's really slow to open. One of the causes of that can be a template. The common scenario is a template is out on a network share that's slow or is somewhere and is not available anymore. Word's trying to open it and it's either taking a long time or it's never getting to it. Removing that template or pointing it back to the template that actually exists can help improve performance in that type of scenario. And when we do the demo, we'll look at how to identify which templates are attached to a document. Templates also drive the styles that are available in a given document, so we store a number of things in the template. I have normal.dotm listed up here. That's the default template. If you have problems with that, best thing to do, or if you have problems with new documents, problems with documents that are attached to it, best thing to do is search your system and remove and rename all of the templates that are named normal.dotm. We will recreate one the next time you launch Word and close it. So we recreate, if this normal.dotm is not present, when you start up Word, we'll spin up a new one from code and then we'll save it out at the end. Print drivers. Print drivers are more than just printing. Clearly, if you have a print driver or a print issue, this is something that you want to test with. So if I print to different printers, do I have the same type of issues? Network versus local, PostScript versus PCL, always good things to test. We certainly have some print issues that happen, are specific to printer languages, so only happen in PostScript or only happen to PCL. Sometimes if you switch to the other version of the driver, you can get away from some issues. Print drivers are also responsible for layout and routing of documents on screen, so pagination, the way that we display things. So if you're getting unexpected display, a quick test to run that's really good is to go in and switch to a different default print driver and then open Word. Typically, I'll switch to a software print driver like a PDF driver or the XPS driver. Those are fairly benign. And they're always available. You don't have to deal with the network and having to get out to that printer. So a good thing to at least try for layout issues. Add-ins, like Outlook, Word can be influenced by add-ins. Word's got some additional complexity, so not only COM add-ins, but also templates. So something to be aware of if you are doing troubleshooting, you can use the same techniques that you used in Outlook. So launch in safe mode, see if the problem reproduces. Use Process Explorer to identify anything that might still be loading that you're not aware of. Last thing that we'll take a look at, and we'll focus on this in the demo, is recovering text from corrupt documents. So this is the disaster recovery scenarios. What are some different things that you can do to recover that? And we'll walk through that in the demo here. So let's switch over to our machine. And I'm going to bring up Word. Just open up my sample document here. All right, so to see which templates are attached to this, there's a few different methods that you can use. The quickest one is to just look over on the info pane over on the right. If you click Show All Properties, here we'll see that we're attached to the normal.dotm template. So it's very quick. You have to show all properties. It does not show by default. What will get you a little bit more control over it is if you go into Options, then Add-ins, and from here we're going to select Templates in that drop-down. This is also available from the Developer tab of the ribbon if you have that enabled, but rather than having to enable that tab, come out and go back to Developer, you can just get to it here. So from here we can see that the document template is normal. We have the ability to attach to a different template by clicking Attach. So if this was a scenario where you had a slow to open document and that you found out by coming in here that that template is out on the network or it doesn't exist anymore, it's been moved, we can attach to a different one and hopefully improve our performance issues. Down at the bottom here, we have global templates and any add-in templates that are loaded. So those are good things to be aware of and things that you can manage from this particular pane. So recovering text from corrupt documents. What sort of things can you do to recover from that scenario? First thing, if you can get the document open, and you have a corrupt document that's just got unexpected behavior. So strange things happen, weird formatting issues, styles, those sort of things. What's the best thing to do? The first thing that we'll usually try and support is if you copy all of the text out of the document except for the last paragraph mark. Now I have formatting marks shown here. That's just under the home tab of the ribbon to show it and hide those. Why the last paragraph mark? We store all of our formatting in the paragraph marks for the preceding paragraph. If there's corruption, it tends to exist in the last paragraph mark. So if we copy all this, paste it into a new document, save it out, do some testing with that document, see if we can reproduce the issue. Next course of action, and this is, again, if you can get the document open, is to do a round trip through RTF. So we're going to save this particular document out as RTF, close Word, open that RTF file, and save it back as a docx to see if we can clean up any corruption that might exist in that document. Why RTF? RTF pushes the document through a converter. When we go through a conversion process, we will sometimes drop corruption that exists within that document. RTF doesn't have all the same formatting capabilities as DOC or DOCX does, so keep in mind that you might want to do some comparison to make sure that you haven't lost anything. But if you're in a corrupt document state, a lot of times getting something out of it is better than having a document that doesn't work at all. Next is the open and repair command. So if I go to open, click this drop-down, select my document, excuse me, and then click this drop-down, I have the option to open and kick off a manual repair of the document. So Word's pretty good about this normally, but open and repair will, you can kick this off manually from here. You can also open in protected view or a few other things. We also have an option in here called recover text from any file. There we go. What recover text from any file does is it will allow you to open any file and we'll try to pull out as much text as we can from that file. This gets you into your disaster recovery. I can't open this document. How do I get text out of it? Recover text from any file is a good way to, one thing you can try. I will preface this by saying that recover text from any file can get really, really messy because we'll look at it and try to decide what's important in this document. We might pull in a lot of stuff that you may not consider important. But if you're in disaster recovery, that's one sort of thing that you can do. The last thing that you can do, if you have the document saved in the open XML file format, is we can drill through the XML and we can pull text out of that XML. I will say offhand that the open XML file formats are much more stable than the binary file formats were, so just having it in docx in and of itself should give you some additional stability. We also have the ability to drill through this thing. So I'm going to make a copy of this. Always make a copy, never delete. the mantra of support. And I'm going to rename this to a zip. And now we have a zip file. All of the open XML file formats, so with Word, PowerPoint, and Excel, they're essentially just a zip container that contains all of the content that's within that file. This is fairly easy to do. What we're going to do here is fairly easy to do with Word, is a little bit more difficult to do with PowerPoint, and is near impossible to do with Excel. So just to preface that, If we drill into the Word folder, we'll see a number of things that are stored within this document. So for example, media, I have a picture in here, so I can pull that picture out if I needed to. Here's my picture, that's in my Word document. Embeddings, I have an Excel chart in here, there's the data that corresponds to that, so all of this is stored within the XML. The one that we're interested in for text recovery is the document.xml. So within the document.xml, here's all of my text that's in my document. So this is split out by paragraph. This is going to be a little bit painful to do, but again, if you're in a disaster recovery scenario where you need to pull text out of a document that won't open, you have this available to you with the OpenXML file formats. Let's take a look at Excel, some troubleshooting that we can do there. So first, we'll start by talking about Excel save issues. So Excel has a somewhat unique process for saving items. If you have save problems in Excel that are user-specific, it's helpful to understand what Excel does when you open and save a file. This is especially applicable for network shares, a common place where this type of thing can occur. So what does Excel need? You need to have read permission first to be able to open the existing file. That one's fairly straightforward. You also need to have write permission to the directory. If you don't have write permission, we won't be able to write a temp file when you attempt to open. Excel, when you open a file, it writes out a temp file, and we do all of our work in that temp file. When you go to save the file, we then delete the original file and rename the temp file to the name of the document or the spreadsheet that you were working on. So if you don't have one of these permissions, this process can break down. And you can end up with things like tons of temp files on your network share where users have their Excel documents stored because they're not able to delete those other files that are there. If you have problems on the network, a couple things, copy local. Always see if you have the same problem locally. Whenever you're working with a document over the network, whether it's Word, Excel, PowerPoint, you're generating about 2.5 times the network traffic of that document size. So if I have a 1 meg document, it could have up to 2.5 meg worth of traffic because of how we work with that document. So something to be aware of. It's you're using a lot more bandwidth than just the file. And of course, that escalates as the file size escalates. Also, be aware of antivirus backup software that's running on the server. We talked about necessary permissions. These type of softwares can also interact with Excel as it's trying to open or save a file. So by nature, for example, antivirus or backup software will say, when we create this temp file, antivirus says, oh, look, the new file. I need to scan that. So I'm going to go scan it, and I'm going to put a lock on the file. And now Excel's got problems because antivirus has got a lock on the file. So something to be aware of, you can use Process Explorer. There's when we looked at DLLs under the View menu, there's a thing called Handles. I'll show you what's got a handle on the file. There's a separate process, sysinternals tool called Handles that can also be useful for identifying what's grabbing the file if you think that's what's going on. Yes? Yep. So the question is, if the file size is like 500 meg for the document, are you going to generate up to 1.5 gigs of traffic over the network?
Yeah.
Potentially, yes. So continuing with troubleshooting in Excel, so we talked about a user-specific issue, kind of focused on permissions. Next is file-specific issues. So formulas that don't calculate correctly can indicate a corruption in the file, general erratic behavior, crashes when using specific sheets. When we do the demo, we'll look at some items that you can use to troubleshoot those. Performance formulas and macros that reference entire columns. If you have performance issues, take a look to see if you have this, especially if you're looking at legacy spreadsheets. So why is this important? If you had a spreadsheet that was created in Excel 2003 and performed great in Excel 2003, and now you've upgraded to 2007 or 2010 and you have a bunch of performance issues, what just happened with those sheets? You went from the 65,000 rows that you were calculating in Excel 2003 to now calculating 1 million rows. If you have like some C colon C, Excel 2003, that was a 65,000 plus item calculation, and now you have a 1 million item plus calculation. So if you have a number of those that can start to compound itself very quickly, and every time you're doing a calculation, you're seeing performance issues. Abundance of objects, we have a good example of this in the demo. But if you have a number of shapes in the spreadsheet, that can cause performance issues with rendering. So what are some other things you can do? Round trip the file. So like we did with Word through RTF, same thing applies for Excel. So if you try and round trip through XLSX, XLS, or XLSB, does that clean up anything, any problems with the file? We can also focus on some of the more common problem areas. So shapes within the spreadsheet, we'll look at that in the demo. Styles, are there lots and lots of styles in the sheet? And if we clean those up, does the problem go away? Defined names, are there dead defined names in the sheet? We'll look at that in our demo as well. And then another troubleshooting technique, Excel in a new shell. And what we mean by that is open up Excel in a new window, copy all of the content from that existing spreadsheet into a new sheet. Does it follow? Is the corruption at the workbook level instead of the data that's within what's within each one of the sheets? So let's look at our troubleshooting here. All right, so I have a broken workbook here. And you can see that this is taking a couple seconds to open. A little bit more time. This VM has 4 gigs of memory, by the way, so it's very performant. This is not a machine issue by any means. It's probably difficult to tell, but as I click around the sheet, it's very slow. As I scroll through it, it's slow to render. So working with this particular sheet is going to be painful for the user. So what's going on with this particular sheet is we've got a number of shapes in here. I'm going to use the goto special command to highlight those shapes and then delete them out. So if I click find and select and then goto special, I have the ability to select a number of different objects that exist within the sheet. What I'm interested in here is objects. Now, this workbook's really unstable, so it's always always interesting to run this demo. It takes a couple moments to go through and select, and then we'll see all the shapes that are in the workbook appear on the screen. Now, how did all these shapes get here? Once we see them appear, it's likely not that the user created all of these shapes and they intended for them to be there. If you look at this, it doesn't really look like there's anything there. One of the more common causes of this is copying and pasting content. So if you copy and paste content from a web page, you copy and paste content over and over within the same sheet, in addition to the data that you're trying to copy, you're also copying those shapes. So it's not user intention for them to be there, but they exist and they contribute to the problem that's occurring. Yes, and we're not responding. So I may end up moving on here. I do have a fixed copy of the workbook, so we can take a look at this. Essentially, all that we're going to do from here is, once those shapes are selected, is just hit delete them out. All right, we'll move on here now. So I'm going to reopen this up, and we'll take a look at the other problem sheet. And again, a bit slow to open. The next thing that we're going to look at is what's driving the slow to open thing here. So if we go to our define name sheet, don't have a lot of data in here. I'm going to go over to formulas and then to name manager, and you can see that I have a ton of defined names in here. A lot of those that have pound refs, so a lot of invalid references. When you open the workbook, Excel has to go out and check all of these named ranges to try and open them. You can see that we're pulling other sheets that I don't have access to out on the iDrive. I don't have this document on C. I don't have this document that's on or sheet available on that network share. So a number of things that Excel's trying to do. Again, it's a good thing to go through and clean these up so we can identify the ones that aren't being used anymore, edit those ranges if we need them, to point them to where the worksheet actually exists. But I've already done this in this other document. So I'm going to close this one, and we'll just make sure that Excel's closed. Yeah, Excel's closed. Nothing behind my back. We'll open up the fixed document, and you'll see it opens very, very quickly. And the only difference, and as I move through this, it's also very, very responsive. So the only things that are different about this workbook versus the problem one is all of the shapes have been removed and all of the named ranges have been removed. Then the last thing that we talked about was Excel in a new shell. Really easy way to do that, especially with Windows 7. Just pin Excel to the left, and then you could open a new Excel instance if you just right-click on Excel. Here we've got another window, and now we can copy our data out of here and paste it into our new sheet. So that technique is called Excel in a new shell. The two-window thing you can do with any Office application in 2010, Word, PowerPoint. So I've requested feature for PowerPoint for quite some time. All right, we'll close with PowerPoint. Some different items to take a look at there. First is Slide Masters. If you're not familiar with Slide Masters, they're present in every presentation, whether you're aware of them or not, and they control the available layouts within the presentation and any formatting that's available within that presentation. If you have a lot of masters or corrupt masters, they can cause unexpected formatting to be applied. So this is a good area to focus on if you have things that aren't formatting correctly. We'll also look at some methods for recovering corrupt slides and a tool called the Selection and Visibility Task Pane, useful for just moving around the file, the slide, and identifying what's on it. So let's flip back over to our demo. To view the masters, if I go to the View tab and then hit Slide Master from here, this will show me all the slide masters that are available in this presentation. Now, I have a number of content masters. These are what drive the content that's available in the new slide dropdown, and also what control the formatting for each of these slides. I only have one here, and if I mouse over each one of them, you can see which slides they're used by. So a good troubleshooting technique is to come in here, take a look at the masters that are available, remove ones that aren't used by any slides. What's the most common way that this occurs is users copying and pasting slides from other presentations and choosing to keep source formatting. When you check that keep source formatting box, what you're telling PowerPoint to do in the background is bring in the slide master from that other presentation and save it in this current presentation. If I'm copying slides one by one and choosing keep source formatting every time I do that, I get a new slide master every single time I do a copy. So in addition to causing formatting problems, if you have a lot of objects on those slide masters, you can also get some file size bloat. It's a good way to control that. Recovering corrupt slides. So a few different techniques. First thing that we typically try and support is called divide and conquer. We'll go through and delete half the slides in the presentation. Does the problem still exist? If yes, the problem is likely on one of those slides that it still exists within the presentation. Delete half of them again until you get down to one slide. Once you get down to that one slide, you can use that same process on the actual content that's on the slide. Delete half the content, and lots of times you'll get down to an individual image or object that's on the slide that's causing performance issues. It's a very simple technique, but it's very, very effective. Recover from XML. We'll take a look at here. We can also do we can do the same thing that we did with Word. It's a little bit different in PowerPoint. I'm going to copy this presentation, rename this to a zip file. Got my asteroids finger going. Within the PowerPoint folder, it's a little bit organized a little bit differently than Word is. If we go into the slides folder, you'll see that we have a different XML file for each one of the slides. Within these XML files, we have the text that's on the slide. It's a little bit harder to pick out than Word is, but it is possible. I don't have a ton of text on any one of these slides, but if you have slides with a lot of text, they're fairly easy to pick out in here. And that's done on a per slide basis. Similar, we can also recover any embedded charts, objects, images, those sort of things. Last method for, and that's, you know, recover from XML is I can't get this slide open. Other thing you can do if you click the new slide dropdown is reuse slides. And we can point this out at a presentation that's on the system. Oftentimes, we're able to insert slides from a presentation that we're not able to open as its own presentation. So that's a good technique to take a look at as well. Last thing is the selection and visibility task pane. So I'm going to move down to a slide that's got a little bit more content on it. And go to select and turn on the selection pane. What the selection pane shows me is all of the objects that are on the slide and gives me the ability to see Z order visibly. So things that are on top of this list are on top of the slide. I can reorder things here. If I have having trouble selecting objects because I have a really cluttered slide, selection and visibility task pane can help out with that. If you have something that's on the slide that does not show in selection and visibility task pane, it's not actually on the slide. It's on the slide master. So then you can go back to that previous item and see if you can remove that item or whatever you're trying to do with it. So in the slide deck, if you pull this down from the site, you'll have a list of the resources that we talked about in the throughout the presentation. We have Outlook resources here, the Twitter feed for OCAT, MS_OCAT. If this is information that you were interested in, we have a number of other Office and SharePoint sessions left during the presentation, so here's some of the other ones that are going on. Some resources for Office content, whether it's 365 or just Office client. And please submit your evaluations. Your evaluations help us decide if we're delivering the right content, also help me improve as a speaker, so I appreciate your evals. With that, I'll open it up to any questions, and thanks for attending the session today. Hope you enjoy the rest of TechEd.